It's one of Australia's most baffling unsolved missing persons cases. In 2007, four people, including a five-year-old girl, vanished in Western Australia amid rumours of bizarre behaviour, cults and long-hidden secrets.
Yep, we're trying to track them down.
I'm Dominique Bayens and I've been investigating for the new season of Expanse, The Nan Up 4. Search Expanse on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
My uterus actually has caused me issues all my life.
You can't live like this. You can't keep going like this. Why don't you consider a hysterectomy?
Every patient has the right to choose what happens to their body.
There was so much angst and so many tears leading up to it of, is this the right thing to do?
Come quick, for she has been thus all day and all night, groaning and swooning, clawing at her belly she doth fight. Relieve the pain or prepare the tomb, for she is vexed by the mischief of the wandering womb.
The myth of the wandering womb was brought to us from ancient Greece by her feminist ally, Hippocrates, who thought the uterus, known as the hystera, could detach and roam around the body, causing madness and mischief. And thus, hysteria was used for centuries to explain women's health issues and to dismiss and persecute us. Our wombs don't make us crazy, hysterical witches. They allow us to menstruate, and they're home for babies, which, you know, allows the human population to continue. No biggie, guys, just, you know, over here making life and stuff. But our wombs, or uteruses, can also wreak havoc, whether it's heavy periods, adenomyosis, endometriosis, persistent pelvic pain, cancer, or prolapse. This stretchy organ of great significance can be surprisingly annoying and not a feminist ally, ironically. For people going through it, an operation to remove the uterus, called a hysterectomy, might be an option. According to the Australian Institute of Health and Welfare, around 30,000 women in Australia will have a hysterectomy every year. But removing this organ comes with, whoops, a lot of baggage and emotions. I'm Yumi Steins. Ladies, we need to talk about saying goodbye to your uterus.
I get immense pain with my periods.
Meet Amanda. She's 51 and is mum to a teenage boy. Her uterus trouble started with her very first period and continued throughout her life.
I used to have to get transfusions because my iron levels were so low because of my heavy periods.
Okay.
Yeah, not much fun.
And tell me about when things started going wrong with your urinary continence.
So I started to get a lot more incontinent during my pregnancy. And then I don't think it ever came back from there. So I was one of the mums that when I, you know, took my son to the trampoline centre, didn't want to be jumping on the trampoline.
Sure.
Yeah. And I was always, you know, taking pads and whatever else to prepare myself for the situation.
But sometimes the situation at hand was more than Amanda could manage. Like one night when her son's soccer team had a parents versus kids match.
My son wanted me to do it. And I was like, no. And he was begging and pleading. So I thought, yeah, okay, I'll do it. And sure enough, I was incontinent as I was running around on the field.
Ah.
When we got back to the car, I pulled out a shopping bag from the boot of my car and sat on that because I didn't want to sit on my car seat knowing that I'd probably leak urine into it.
The soccer field wasn't the only place where Amanda would feel what she calls the trickle.
If I was out walking and I trip, I'd be incontinent.
Okay.
If I sneezed, I would be incontinent. And if I was going out somewhere special, I'd take pads, wear pads, stock up my little handbag with pads.
Amanda managed her painful and full-on heavy periods with a Mirena, but the urinary incontinence got steadily worse.
And so, at 47, a full 10 years after having her son and still leaking like a goon bag with a stabbing injury, she went looking for some bloody answers. She did pelvic floor exercises, used special creams, saw a physio, and was diagnosed with bladder prolapse, which is when weakened pelvic muscles give way and your bladder drops into the vagina. On a mission to fix her prolapse, Amanda got an ultrasound on her nether regions and her doctor didn't like what she saw.
They had found a growth on one of my ovaries and that sent alarm bells through her brain. So she was like, right, we need to get you to the gynecologist now. In my head, I was like, oh, you're thinking cancer.
This wasn't just one growth on her ovaries, there were multiple. And they were no joke for her medical team. She was fast-tracked past your usual wait lists and saw a urogynecologist within a week.
They said that they would recommend doing a full hysterectomy, removing both of my ovaries, and they would also look at putting a sling in for my incontinence at the same time.
The growths on Amanda's ovaries were potentially cancerous, and because it's difficult to biopsy an ovary, doctors wanted them out. That sling she mentioned for her prolapse is a mesh material that helps hold up those sinking organs. For Amanda, the prospect of a hysterectomy was daunting.
I was completely shocked to begin with. I felt like part of my womanhood was going. It was like, they're my girly organs. That's what makes me a woman. And they're taking them away from me. It was really, really shocking.
Some of those girly organs are responsible for making estrogen, and Amanda was worried about how she'd be affected.
Because my ovaries were getting removed, I'd be put into immediate menopause. Mm. So I had a lot of fear, I guess, around that, and just thinking, so how is my body going to cope with that? I had a lot of thoughts around how it was going to affect my sex life. I had been in a relationship for about 2.5 years and we had a really good, active sex life. As stupid as it sounds, at the age of 50, it was also, oh my God, I will never be able to have a baby again, which I didn't want, but I had always wanted to have two children and was only able to have one, so yeah. It really felt really final.
Ladies, meet gynecological surgeon and hysterectomy whiz, Dr. Pav Nanayakara. She is out to set right these troublesome wombs.
I hate bleeding and pain and all the rest of it too. That's why I became a gynae. So I just, any revenge we can get.
Dr. Pav says the most common reason for getting a hysterectomy is to treat really heavy bleeding and pelvic pain, things that disrupt people's daily lives.
The other common reasons are conditions like endometrial hyperplasia, which is a precancerous condition, uterine cancer, fibroids, conditions like adenomyosis and endometriosis. It can provide some relief, but occasionally there can be other factors involved with the pain there that doesn't take away the pain completely.
With hysterectomies, it's not just the uterus that can get the flick. There's the ovaries, fallopian tubes, cervix and lymph nodes. What goes and what stays depends on what you're trying to treat. For Amanda, our soccer mum, doctors recommended that she get her uterus, fallopian tubes and her ovaries removed because of those potentially cancerous growths on them. But where possible, Pav says that surgeons try to keep the ovaries.
If we remove both your ovaries at the time of an operation, we induce surgical menopause. So not only does that put you into menopause in terms of all of the horrible side effects of hot flushes, night sweats, mood changes, loss of libido, vaginal dryness, change to sleep, irritability.
There are some more serious possible long-term implications if you remove your ovaries. It can affect your heart, bones, and cognition, which potentially takes years off your life.
So the decision to remove ovaries is one we take very, very seriously.
Why do some people choose to have their fallopian tubes removed?
We know that a lot of ovarian cancer originates in the fallopian tubes. It's very easy to remove the fallopian tubes at the same time as the uterus is removed. They serve no purpose anymore once the uterus is removed. Mm-hmm. And we can reduce the risk of ovarian cancer by about 2/3.
How's that for a 2-for-1 deal? One of the conditions Dr. Pav treats is adenomyosis, where tissue similar to the lining of the uterus grows into the muscle wall of the uterus. It can cause heavy periods and, you guessed it, a lot of pain.
So for conditions like adenomyosis, where the problem is within the uterus itself, doing a hysterectomy can cure the condition. Once the uterus is gone, that problem is gone.
But for endometriosis, where tissue of the uterus lining grows outside of the uterus and throughout the body, a hysterectomy might be helpful but not a cure-all.
Once the uterus is gone, it will just remove period pain. Any pain that occurs outside the cycle, or if there are little microscopic deposits that are not removed at the time of the hysterectomy, may continue to cause pain in these patients.
But if your lady house is suffering from structural issues like prolapse, the advice around surgery has changed in recent years.
So nowadays, the recommendation is to preserve the uterus in cases of prolapse, because if you can kind of imagine it like a house with the support beam, the uterus is almost like a little bit of a support holding everything up from above.
Remember Amanda's sling? She needed to keep that roof from caving in. For people with a uterus who are of childbearing age, the prospect of removing the baby house is taken very seriously by medicos. Every clinic has different rules about second opinions, mental health assessments, and how thoroughly a younger patient is assessed before they can get a hysterectomy.
As long as the patient's informed, then, you know, very few people go on to regret that decision later on in life.
There's grief, yes, there's hard moments. I've said no to some first birthdays and baby showers.
This is Belle. She's 33 and had a hysterectomy last year. She knew it was the right thing for her, but making the choice to get rid of her uterus was still tough.
It was a real struggle to sign the form to do it. I'm comfortable with the idea of not having children. However, I was crying every time I thought about having the hysterectomy. My mum is a maternal health nurse. I think she always thought I would have children, and I could see the grief in her.
But Belle had lived with unbearable pain and heavy periods for 22 years, and her mum had a front row seat to that torment. The pain started when she got her period aged 10.
I remember getting home from school on that first day and my mum meeting me about halfway home. She knew straight away exactly the same as what she had been through, and her mum as well.
Oh my God. So it was a hereditary thing.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
So she met you halfway and you were like, what the fuck is this, mum?
Legit. Yep. Yeah. Legit.
Belle didn't know it at the time, but she had adenomyosis, that condition that Dr. Pav sees quite a bit. She also had endometriosis. Yep, Belle's ailments were twinsing. It meant she was dealing with years of heavy bleeding and pain, the kind of pain that stopped her from enjoying a normal life.
It was excruciating pain, bend over, takes your breath away. In the end, I was passing out from my pain. I would feel it coming and I would get down on the ground.
Belle had countless ultrasounds, multiple surgeries for her endo, went on a drug that put her into a temporary menopause and gave her hot flushes, and spent most of her disposable income on treatments. Still, the pain was relentless.
I was on opioids in the end to manage my pain, and when you're on those, you know, you can't do anything. It got to the point that I would message my partner and be like, I'm going home to pop a poppy. And he knew that that meant I was going home to pop an opioid. And so I was going to bed. I wouldn't be able to cook dinner. It was on him. He was taking those duties that night because my pain was that bad. I just needed to go home and take that medication and escape the pain.
Both her mother and grandmother experienced similar symptoms and had hysterectomies in their 30s and 40s. So she was aware that this big surgery might be in her future. It was something Belle and her boyfriend talked about really early on.
So when I met my partner, he said to me, like, look, if having children is impacted by this, I want you to know I'm comfortable not having children. And, you know, we've waited our whole life to find each other. And to us, that's what's important, is that we've got each other and we're thankful for what we do have. And so we're both comfortable not having children.
Even though Belle and her partner had accepted a future without kids, the medical fraternity was reluctant to suggest she get a hysterectomy.
I've been with my partner for almost 5 years and we'd had that discussion, I want to say less than a month into knowing each other. And they were still reluctant.
She was sick of it, she wanted answers she wasn't being given, and she felt like her pain wasn't being taken seriously. There was one time when she made a specialist appointment to talk about her debilitating condition, and it didn't go well.
I just feel like there's that classic stereotype, just another emotional female. I had a surgeon write that on a medical document.
What?
That they had a long, teary discussion with me after an appointment. One, I'd paid for that long appointment.
Yeah.
Two, I actually never cried in that appointment. So I don't know where they got the word teary from.
Did they really write that down, emotional
They
female?
Did. They
oh,
wrote down
my
that
God.
It was a long, they wrote down it was a long, teary discussion.
A teary discussion from a hysterical woman. It's 2026, people. Can we divest from the ancient Greek mythology already? Jeez. Belle sought out a new specialist, but it was actually her GP who suggested the hysterectomy.
My GP was very firm in, you can't live like this. You can't keep going like this.
Belle knew she needed a radical solution to the unbearable pain and bleeding that she was dealing with every day. But it was still a heavy decision.
We say we do it by choice, like we're signing for it, but I actually don't think we have a choice. Like, what was I meant to do? Keep passing out from my pain? Keep living on opioids?
Belle's GP referred her to a new surgeon who finally made her feel understood.
We spoke about it and he leant in from my history and everything and said, hey, yes, you can have a hysterectomy. That was it.
At 50 years old, Amanda, who had growths on her ovaries and had struggled with incontinence, she had a total hysterectomy, including the removal of her fallopian tubes and ovaries. And to try to help with her prolapse, surgeons put in a mesh sling under her urethra.
The surgery all went really well. They showed me photos, which was great.
Mm.
I saw my ovaries, which were lumpy with the growth on it.
Wow, you saw your ovaries.
Yeah.
That's so cool. What did they look like?
Just like little oval, slimy kind of looking balls that were lumpy.
Wow.
Mine were lumpy, yeah, from all the growth on them.
Surgeons also found a big fibroid on Amanda's uterus and they found endometriosis.
Which was a real light bulb moment for me when they told me that, because I had always wondered if I had endometriosis given my difficulty with my periods, and we tried to conceive a second child and weren't able to. So it kind of gave me some answers of, oh, that's why I went through all that pain all the times that I had my period.
Amanda was happy with how the surgery went, but recovering from a hysterectomy isn't like recovering from having your eyebrows done.
It was painful, which I knew it was going to be. So the first couple of days, it was sort of hard to sit up when I was lying in the hospital bed. I'd use the mechanics to sit myself up, and I was on strong pain relief and doing lots of breathing as I was transitioning from sitting to standing and walking very slowly.
And once you had your ovaries removed, which put you into medical menopause, how did you manage that?
They put me on HRT straight away.
HRT or MHT is menopausal hormone therapy. It's often given to women in perimenopause when hormone production slows down. And speaking of, Ladies We Need to Talk did an awesome mini-series on perimenopause that gets deep into the fascinating science of hormones. Scroll back in your feed to find it. Anyway, Amanda didn't have her estrogen-producing ovaries anymore. And even with the MHT, the sudden menopause caused a bit of chaos.
So week four after surgery, I just couldn't go to sleep. It was like my brain just couldn't remember how to sleep. I felt tired, but I'd lie there awake at nighttime. So I increased my HRT dose and now my sleep has improved.
I am curious about orgasms because you were worried that a hysterectomy might change the feeling or the sensation of orgasming.
I can say that I have orgasmed since the surgery.
Yeah.
And it felt great. I've only done it once. And there was the satisfaction, the happiness, the joy that comes with an orgasm. But there was also just that relief of, oh, yes, it's going to happen. I'm okay.
And how about your incontinence?
My incontinence is gone.
Oh, yay.
It's amazing.
Well done. That must be amazing. So you can sneeze?
Yes, I can sneeze. I can trip. I can
walk
yell
around
at my
the block.
Son.
You mentioned womanhood and those body parts being sort of intertwined with your sense of femaleness or womanhood. Mm. Has that changed? Like, how do you feel about it now?
It hasn't. It hasn't changed, I think, because physically I still look the same, and I guess I look like a woman still. I have to say I do love not PMSing, so that's a really nice feeling. After it all happened, I just felt really, yeah, really good about my body and really, like, I have a strong body that can cope with things.
The best outcomes I have are when patients send me a letter or something 5 years later just saying I feel like I've got my life back again.
This is Dr. Pav Nanayakara again. She says her hysterectomy patients are often supremely stoked after surgery.
A lot of them look back and say it's the best thing they've ever done and they wish they had done it 10 years earlier.
And when it comes to sex, Dr. Pav says a lot of folks are having a great time post-op too.
For a lot of people, they find that sexual satisfaction is actually increased after a hysterectomy, and that's predominantly because of why the hysterectomy was performed in the first place. So things like heavy bleeding and period pain are better.
The uterus contracts during orgasm. So when it's removed, does that change the feeling of an orgasm or a woman's ability to orgasm?
So orgasm is often related to clitoral sensation and the pelvic nerves. So the ability to orgasm doesn't go away.
But for those who are less clitorally focused?
Some people, and it's a very small percentage, do notice a change in sexual function or that an orgasm may feel differently after a hysterectomy. That's often people that notice uterine contractions related to orgasm. It can feel different.
Dr. Pav says no matter what your concerns are going into a hysterectomy, being comprehensively informed is key.
Often there's a lot of counselling, you know, for people that may grieve loss of fertility, for example. That's when it becomes a little bit more sensitive.
Counselling is a particularly big thing when folks are seeking a hysterectomy for gender-affirming reasons.
They have endocrinologists who are hormone specialists. They have gynecologists. They have psychologists, because it's obviously a very big decision, particularly if it's someone younger. We want to make sure that we mitigate any of those risks for the patient as much as possible.
But just like in Belle's case, where a doctor called her an emotional female, Dr. Pav gets people coming to her who've been through the ringer.
Unfortunately, in my practice, I see a lot of patients who come to me feeling misheard or that their symptoms have been dismissed, and particularly around decisions like a hysterectomy, where many of them have thought about it for a number of years, can feel like getting to the point of having a discussion with someone where it feels like a very real possibility can take a long time.
But for people who've gone through the process, the whole experience can be extremely validating and profoundly positive.
So I have patients who've made piñatas and they have boot the ute parties. I've had patients who've had cocktail-themed parties for the hysterectomy and had bloody margaritas. And a lot of them look back and say they wish they had done it 10 years earlier. Wow. Because it's had a big impact on their quality of life.
I woke up in less pain and went home in less pain than when I'd walked in.
At 32, Belle's adenomyosis was so bad that she had her uterus, cervix, and fallopian tubes removed. After a 5-hour surgery, she woke up to a new reality.
I just didn't have those real heavy symptoms of this, like, heavy, boggy feeling and just the pain.
How has the pain been since, Belle?
Amazing. I have never been in such a good spot. I feel like I've got a new lease of life.
From passing out, taking time off work, and being on opioids, Belle now experiences her body completely differently.
When you talk about the uterus, my pain is not there.
But Belle does still have endometriosis, which wasn't fixed by the operation.
I do still have some of that left side pain.
Yep.
From that ovulation, because that side was always quite tricky with the endometriosis. However, that uterus pain is not there and I don't know myself.
You said to my producer, Tamar, that you wanted to have a hysterectomy party.
Yes.
What would that look like?
Popping that champagne, but also that real big, hey, I've made it out this side and I'm so glad I did it, because there was so much angst and so much grief and so many tears leading up to it of, is this the right thing to do? I think we talk so much about what leads into having a hysterectomy. I don't believe it's a choice. I believe it's a last opportunity to reclaim your life and to be at the driver's seat. You know, it's on me. And I want other people to understand, hey, there is a life outside of this at the end. I know that there's ongoing things with endometriosis, but I think it's a celebration.
Coming to terms with not having kids has been mixed for Belle and her family. But her mother and grandmother had struggled with intense pain and bleeding too. 4 months after the surgery, Belle caught up with her nan.
And the first thing she did was give me a hug and say, I know you've done the right thing.
Oh my God.
So to hear that from my 85-year-old nan when I am childless and 33, and one of the only grandchildren that doesn't have children in the family, that hit hard. And it was, hey, she totally gets
it. She gets it. And that must have been so validating for your grandma to say you made the right choice.
Yeah. I don't expect that from my 85-year-old nan.
Mate, like, those bitches are woke.
Right.
And congratulations on taking your womb into your own hands.
Thanks, literally.
I'm so happy for you. Like, I know you've still got the endo stuff and that's a thing, but it sounds like your quality of life really has skyrocketed.
Absolutely.
Taking your womb into your own hands can be daunting, but also incredibly empowering. The surgery is major and not remotely like getting your eyebrows waxed, but it can, like good eyebrows, reframe one of the most important things in your life. How your body feels and how you move through the world inside of that body is one of the most profound and personal parts of being a human. If there are things that we can do to improve the experience of being inside our bodies, then we absolutely should wander with our wandering wombs into the world of medicine, science, and surgery, because sometimes physio and prayer is just not enough. This podcast was produced on the lands of the Gadigal and Muwinina peoples. Ladies We Need to Talk is mixed by Anne-Marie de Bettencourt. It's produced by Elsa Silberstein and Sarah Mashman, and our executive producer is Tamar Kranswick. This series was created by Claudine Ryan.